Fisher by the Historical Team interview. Today is Thursday, January 19th, 2006. We're at UAW Local 602's conference room. First, we'll go around and name the interviewers.
Jerry Smith.
Cheryl McCoy.
Doug Rademacher.
Mike Fleming.
And Marilyn Coulter. Today, our interviewee is Miss Roberta Cannon. Roberta, will you please say your name and spell your last name?
Roberta Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N.
And your address, please?
1202 Fairway Lane, that's Lansing, Michigan, 48912.
Are you married?
Yes, I'm married. Been married for almost 40 years.
Do you have any children?
I have three grown children, two girls and one boy.
National origin?
African American.
Okay. And your your education level?
I have completed high school education, and I like I think 8 months of home interior decoration. I would have my degree in home interior decoration and design.
Any military service?
No.
So, Roberta, are you originally from Lansing?
I am originally from Tennessee, and I moved from Tennessee to Lansing after high school.
Oh, and what brought you to Lansing?
My husband.
Oh.
He got employed with, he come to Michigan after high school and moved to Albion with his uncle. And after that, we're high school and boyfriends and girlfriends. And he moved from Tennessee to Michigan, and after a year, we got engaged. And he got employed. He was employed with GM. And after that, we got married, and of course, I followed him.
And you followed your high school sweetheart.
Yes.
Your husband here. Now, and is he employed also at Fisher Body?
He's employed with Fisher Body. He retired after 36 years.
Mm-hmm. And you are retired too now?
I'm retired also.
And how many years of service did you have?
25.
Mm-hmm. So when did you hire in?
1997. No, I'm sorry, excuse me. It's 1987.
You hired in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
So what brought you into the plant?
excuse me. Actually, I wasn't looking for a job, I must say. They were having they was taking apps at Fisher Body, and my sister-in-law wanted to me to go with her to put in for a job. And I said, okay, because I had just had a baby, my son. And after that, I went with her. I said, okay, what the heck? So I went with her. And the funny thing about it, I got hired and she didn't. I felt really bad. But that's what brought me in. I really wasn't looking for a job because, like I said, I just had my son and I was a stay-at-home mom.
So, Roberta, when they hired you in, did you have to wait in line at the plant? Were you at a hiring agency? What was that day like when you...
Well, and let me go back. I guess let me see if I can remember. We went to put in for an application right down in the lower lobby. They had tables set up, and you sat there and you put in the application. They said, we'll call you. I got called about 4 or 5 days after that, and that went on.
So, do you remember the department that you hired in it?
Trim.
Trim.
And I've always stayed in trim.
And so, were you in day shift, night shift?
Well, see, that was the problem because I wasn't for sure if I wanted to take the job because I didn't have a babysitter. I didn't really have family. It was just hiring myself. And I didn't really know anybody. And I wasn't sure what shift. So they hired me. Of course, they said, new hires, you're going on night shift. And so Harvey had enough seniority where he could switch around. So that's what happened. But luckily, at that time, I was hired in on night shift, and he was already on days. And so he was the babysitter, and I was work.
Michael Fleming?
Hi, Roberta. Talk about when you came in, you've asked you some questions about that. How intimidating was that for you, coming to work in a factory? Sure, it was the first time you came to work in a factory, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Talk about, was it intimidating for you, or was it?
No. It wasn't, because if it was, I would quit, because like I said, I wasn't looking for a job anyway, so I wouldn't have stayed. It wasn't intimidating. In fact, when I was hired in, the people were very nice to me. In fact, I think, again, I was hired in on nights, but I stayed on nights short time, and I did a flip. They put me back on days. And so I left Harvey, had to switch back to nights. And but the people, I was hired in the trim department, and the people were very nice to me. It wasn't intimidated. I wasn't intimidated by anyone at that time.
The population of the plant was right around 5,000 people at that time, being 3,000, 4,000. Mm-hmm. Was it around 5,000 maybe?
Was it 5 or?
4 or 5,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were in trim.
I was in the trim, and I was doing door locks.
Where did you go when you went to day shift?
I went to the same department, but somebody bumped me. So I stayed on that job. You know, I didn't switch. I stayed always in, did door locks, stayed there.
Marilyn Coulter. So Roberta, if I may, how old were you when you hired in the plant?
You see, you're messing me up here because I was at 30.
So coming into the work environment at 30, were there many people your age, or were they younger? What was it like?
It was people there, I think, my age, but I worked with a old group of people of my around my age. It was some young people there, but the area I was in, they were mostly my age.
More mature people.
Yeah, one of the guys, they called him Junior, and he was from Brighton. He was the oldest one that was on the job.
So what was, you said that everyone treated you nice.
Yeah.
What was the thought on your first day when you walked in?
I'm saying, what am I going to do here? Because, you know, you have all these cars going and nothing, everybody's doing a job, and I'm saying, can I keep up? Can I keep up? So that was my concern, if I can keep up and hope they don't give me nothing hard. That was it.
So because you had a husband who already worked here, was it what he told you? Was it what you had envisioned?
No, not really, he said, just go in and, you know, do your job and do it the best you can. If you can't do it, you got a right to call your committee man, and if you get hurt, you know, he kind of walked me through it, and he says, but you may get a hard job, you may get an easy job. He said, if you can't handle it, you can't handle it, and he said, we'll survive. So, because actually, I thought at the time, mainly is because I just went in because I used the money for my children's education. That's basically what I did with the money, is for education. I didn't feel guilty coming out because I had gotten my kids we had got our kids through college. My last son, I come out when my last son was in college, and I felt, you know, we had made it and had enough that we could put him through college without doing a lot of financial aid.
And so you have three children, and your children do what?
I have three children, and my oldest daughter is a doctor. She's OBGYN, and they're 5 years apart. And my second daughter is a pharmaceutical rep, and my son is an elementary education teacher.
So it's work well spent.
So the money is well worth spent.
Cheryl? Cheryl McQuay.
Roberta, you said that your first job in there was door locks?
Yes. Yes.
And how long did you do that job?
I did that job for about a year.
Could you kind of walk me through that job? How did you install a door lock?
Well, I did the back door locks. And you just take a lock, and the door lock itself, because, you know, they had the one that, you know, still pulls out. And you insert, go in, open the door, and you go stick your hand down inside. You put the rod in, insert the rod, and you click the rod to the door lock so that it could pop up. And that was basically it. And then the next person will tighten it down.
So was it a pretty easy job?
It was an easy job. Much easier than what I see that some of them were doing. In fact, which we were doing illegal stuff, we was working each other's job at lunchtime. You know, we could move fast enough where we'd go from one side to the other to help out the other person if they needed help or if they got down the line, because, you know, we didn't want to get down the line.
So if there was a two-door, you worked on the back door. If there was a two-door...
I did say two-door. It was a four-door, and I worked on the back door. It was four-door cars.
So if a two-door came down the line, mm-hmm. what did you do to the two-door? Was that just a free job, or...?
That was the job for the next person to do, because I think, my mind clear, you didn't have to do any tighten down. So that left me free, and the other guy had to do it. I just stuck the rod down in, and he put the lock in and tightened it down. Because you put your door lock in, and it was a little plastic thing. It was like a coat hanger, and you stick it through, and it locks it down. So when you did a four-door, I put the rod in, and the other guy put the lock in. And it was something different you had to do. Both of them, the front door was a little bit different from the back door. Okay.
And then what was your next job after?
My next job, I hated it. It was putting in the deadeners. I think they were called the deadeners inside the car to soundproof it before they put in the headliners. And you had to climb up in the car, and you got this, like, you know, they sprayed it. You were all sticky. It was a mess. I hated it because I was too sharp for the job, really. And you had to climb. Some of the men could easily do it because they could stand out on the floor and just pop it up, do the deadener up in there. But I was sharp, and I had to climb up in the car to make sure I got it up in. Especially, it was very hard for me to do the two-door. Two doors, because I had to climb up in there.
Roberta, how tall are you?
I'm 5'5" and a half.
Continue.
Marilyn Coulter. Roberta, during your time working in trim, are there any special memories that you have?
Like I said, I have always worked in trim. Except when I had to go, went out on sick leave and had to go come back in had come back in, and I had to couldn't do my job, so they would send me upstairs in 3X, and I did inspection, and I did inspection in the body shop. So, like I said, I have no bad memories, really bad memories about all my jobs. They were pretty, I was pretty well satisfied because I was a crybaby. No, I wasn't really a crybaby, but I guess Lord was on my side. I was lucky as far as some of them.
In your coworkers, what types of things did you do for lunch? Well, for breaks? What types of things did you do?
Yeah, we used to have at lunch, one of my favorite supervisors was Doug Stott. And so at that time, if you wanted anything special, feed him. So all we had to do is bring him some lunch. We would have dinners in our area, you know, not only holidays, we would doing, it wasn't a special time. Like if I would do barbecue chicken, my friend Debbie Norris and China Wilson, we all worked down there. We would all bring something in and we would feed Doug. And so that would make our night, because if the next week we wanted the time off to go to our kids' basketball game or something like that, he would fix it so we could do that, so we can bless him again next week with some food. But I would usually go home for lunch because, like I said, I had three kids at home and I wasn't too far from home. If I had about 30 minutes break, I could zip home and look at my kids, make sure they were okay, and come back. And I would, or else I would just stay in my area, me and my friends. We'd sit there at the table and have lunch or go to the cafeteria. That was, you know, I didn't ever do a lot of running out. Because if I didn't go home, I would call the kids and make sure that they were okay. And that was at the time when my daughter was in high school, my oldest daughter was in high school, and she was good that we could depend on her also. When Dad wasn't there, because it was at a time when Harvey had to, we were both on the night shift, and she was, thank God, that was when she was at high school. Like I said, my kids are 5 years apart, so they still talk about Freddie giving him a hard time because he was the baby, and they would, be the watch over him. But I was pretty well. I was pretty lucky. But I basically stayed in. We just.
Now I seem to remember you telling me a story about the Buckmaster Sons. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I worked with Bob Buckmaster and on door locks. He was on one side, and I was on the other, and along with the older gentleman, we called him Junior, and Roger. I can't think of Roger's last name, but we would have at lunchtime, and when I was on days at lunchtime, we would have Bob go down. His dad was a plant assistant supervisor, and you know, their car could be pulled inside the garage. So we would work, when I was speaking about working each side of the job, each going from one side of the line to the other, working jobs. Well, that was a time when we would do Bob's job. And so he could go to McDonald's for us and get us. He would go down, our job was right where at the time where he could zip down the steps, jump in his dad's car, and go to McDonald's and be back by lunchtime, by the time the line go down. So that was exciting thing. We got McDonald's every now and then when we complain about the food in the lunchroom. And another time was when, again, when I didn't get any sleep and my son was sick, you know, at night, and I'd stay up half the night with him sick, I would come in, and Junior would go to the bar every day. That was Junior's, no doubt, he would go to the bar every single day. And so I would sleep. And I would tell Junior, when you come back, Junior, wake me up. I would climb up on the door locks was in the big container. And I would climb up in the container and lay down on a piece of cardboard and sleep until 12:30. That was a big booster for me. I didn't need just that, just energized me. So he would wake me up. So that, they helped me out. They really helped me out a lot. Let's see what else. I can't think of anything exciting.
Roberta, Mike Fleming. Throughout all this, as you were working in the trim department, did you happen to have a boss, supervisor, or even the general foreman that you liked better than another one, or did you have problems at all with any management people?
You know, it's amazing how lucky, because Doug Stock was on one shift, and Dale Tolliver Dale Tolliver was one, and another, I can't think right now of other supervisor, but those are the two that stuck out in my mind, was Dale, because they worked opposite of each other. And Dale Tolliver was a quiet supervisor. He was great. And I can remember one incident that we pulled on Dale Tolliver. All you had to do was feed Doug, and he was great. But Doug was great anytime. He would, and in fact, he was, I think I was the only one that he remembered my Social Security number by heart. So I guess I was something about me that excited him, but I think it was the food though. And Dale Tolliver, one, it was his birthday. We used to celebrate the supervisor's birthday. And so, you know how quiet Dale was, you know, he was quiet, easygoing guy. So we had it all planned up. He needed excitement. So on his birthday one night, we had a belly dancer to come in. And you know, he doesn't take much for him to get red anyway. Man, was his face red. It was one of the girls in there. I'm not for sure if it was Jackie Romanoff or who, but she had a friend that did belly dancing. And so we sneaked her in through the basement up the steps. And we were still down on the end where we could get her up the steps from the H line. And here come this lady across the hall, across the aisle with, and the line almost stopped, because when we had it, had her come in about lunchtime. And this lady come in and everybody was looking, and then she had her radio and the music went off and we had Dale right there. And it was amazing. Everybody come around, and Dale, I tell you, that was great. I will never forget that. It was funny. It was really funny. And one of my favorite pickup guys was Nellie Cox. Nellie Cox was one of the great pickup person that I enjoyed.
Roberta, can you please explain what a pickup person is?
Oh, I'm sorry. When we get down the line, and I miss a job or we mess up a job, we will holler pickup. And that, he was a repair guy. I guess I should he's a repair, he was our repair person in our area. And so when we got down the line, we would holler pickup, and Nelly was our pickup person. He would come and do it. Or if you had need to go to the bathroom before for time come for your break, or did the pickup man to give you your break, we would call. So Nelly was a good person. He was always there. He didn't have an excuse or nothing. But my biggest crybaby person was Roy Plummer. I was a person that had a big mouth, and I threatened his life because I was older, and he was the, you know, they were a bunch of young guys. And Roy come up with some kind of excuse, especially after lunch. And don't come here with no mess, Roy. Come on, give me my break, you know. I'll be back. No, now. So some of them, I treated them like my kids for when I had them. But it was a lot of them I treated like my children in there. Larry Johnson was one. Oh. I think Larry Johnson still owed me about $50 because he stayed broke. But I had some pretty good times. Also, one thing that person I remember was Gary Barnett. He was our past president here. Gary was in our area, and that was the time I was putting in gas doors. And Gary was supposed to leave the area, and he was going to go down, and he got bumped, and he had to go down in the on A line at that time. It's called A line to do a job. So we were going to give Gary Barnett a dinner, and They had me do turkey and dressing, and I think he had figured out, and I did everything. And what happened? Gary no show up. Gary stays home that Friday night. And he won't let me forget that either. Every time I see him, and he said, I know, I know. And to this day, when I see him in Detroit, he'll say, I know, I know. And he said, that was one big one I put on. He said, but I really hated that because you know how I like your food. It's too late. I'll never cook another thing for you. But that was one of the nice things I remember also. That was funny.
Roberta, it's Doug Rademacher. You were talking about helping each other on the assembly line. You had where you'd help each other. If someone got down the line, you'd take initiative. Did you consider your work, people in your work area, your brothers and sisters? And what is that family relationship that they talk about?
Yes. That was a time when I think all of us enjoyed coming to work. Because we had good time, we had good times also. We could mix it, work with play, I guess I put it that way. And I considered all of them brothers and sisters. We could say anything, you know, and help out each other. Nobody, we all enjoyed, it was, we come together when someone needed help. And I considered that we were all friends and neighbors away from home. Brothers and sisters away from home. And it was a happy time. It was a happy time. Like I said, I enjoyed it. But I guess as we grow older and the young generation come in, they don't realize, I guess, I think it was the upbringing.
And what do you think's lost now?
I think what's lost now, the young generation, is the upbringing that they come in, that they think they can do everything by themselves. I can do this, and I don't need your help. Where that back then, we could do it, but we help out each other to make our jobs easier. And the young generation think they don't have to ask anybody. They make the job harder by not communicating to myself. That's my theory on it.
Mike Fleming, Roberta. There was name changes throughout the times of the facility. There were name changes throughout the facility from LCA to BOC to and whatever the other one was, I don't quite remember. What did you feel about the changes in the name of that facility? Do you what did you call it? What would you call the facility?
They had different names, specified different areas and everything. But at the time I was in there, I could send it, none of this name changing really didn't come around until I think after I had gone out. I had retired. I was out of the plant. I was out of the plant on a disability leave for a couple years with my back. So a lot of this change come around before I retired. I was in and out on the sick leave. My basic thing, I was also in the plant, an EPG leader in my area. That was the employees.
Participation.
Yeah, employees' participation. And I was the EPG leader in the area. And I tried to help everybody. And if they had problems, I did the legwork. I was the gopher, you know. And I think go back to, let me kind of revert back. That comes in when you got a person. When you try to help somebody in the area, you know, some of them don't, the young people don't want your help. You know, they think they know everything. But at that time, I was an EPG leader before they start categorizing everything in each area. And I tried to help everybody, got all the information I could, you know, and that I felt that was my job to help the people in our area. And at that time, I did have a couple people was Frank Lilly. He was a Cuban, and he couldn't speak very English very well. And Freddie Smits, he was a person, he come on his job, he would not leave his area unless he go to the bathroom, and he wouldn't really talk to anybody. So you had to befriend him. He wasn't an unfriendly person, but he was, I would say, the shy person. So you make it a point to go up and down the line, let people know who you are, speak to them every day, and see if there's anything you could do for them. Even if I wasn't off the line to do my EPG work, I'd still focus on the people that I thought they had that needed help, and try to clarify stuff.
Remember, they changed the name of the plant from VOC to LCA, but it was Fisher Body to start with. What do you call that place over there? What does it mean to you?
Fisher Body. It was Fisher Body to me, and it's still Fisher Body to me because I was hired in as Fisher Body, and I was a Fisher Body person. So, you know, and I think that's why everybody think, hey, I don't care what you call it, it's always going to be Fisher Body because it was Fisher Body when I come in. You can name it 50 names, but it's always going to be Fisher Body because you reflects back to the Fisher Body days.
When you worked in trim, did you experience any type of accidents, fatal accidents? Did you see anyone that get hurt really seriously? And possibly anyone? Did you ever see anyone get killed in a plane?
No, thank God, I didn't. And that trim department, I think, was a pretty safe area, the department I was in. So, no, I did not experience any heart attacks or nobody, a car hitting anybody or anything. So, I think it was a pretty safe place.
Go.
So you said as an EPG group leader, you used to take care of people. Were you able to be involved in other type programs, or what were some of the differences that you noticed in the plant once employees started getting involved in the processes?
I think it helped when the employees got involved, because it I think it let them know that they were trying to make a difference within their workplace. It wasn't all management. The management allowed them to voice their opinion and to help out.
So Lansing was always called the capital of quality. We were always at the top of the list. What do you attribute that to?
I contribute that to solidarity, working together, pulling together, and employees understanding where they were and where they're trying to get to and how to make things better for them in order to keep their job. And in order to keep your job, you got to do a good job. And I think by doing that, that's what to bring you to the top.
And you said that Doug Scott and Tolliver were good supervisors. What were some of the things that made a bad supervisor to you?
You would have these little the guys come in. I know
contract.
It's the contractors come in, and to take over. Not take over, but thinking that they know, you know, more than you, and they could even do your job. They didn't even attempt. You tell them, I need this on a job. This is bothering me. I need to go to the hospital. Why is this, you know, why is that doing? You can't go to the hospital because that's simple. You could do that. How do you know I can do that when you haven't stood there and watched me and they couldn't do the job. So if you can't do the job, don't tell me what I should be doing, or how I should do it, or how it should not affect me. So it was the contractors, I think, left a bitter taste in some of the people's, the employees' job.
You spoke earlier about your husband saying that there was a problem, call your committee man. Tell me, how'd you feel about your union? Were you active in your union? Want to tell us a little bit about that?
I was active in my union. I attended the union meeting. But I never had a problem where I had to call my committee man. But I did have a great committee man when I needed to call him. And one person stands out more than any, it was Ron Perry. Ron Perry was a caring person, and he cared about his people in his area. But I was lucky. I wasn't a person that called my committee man every time it turned around, every time a problem come. I tried to talk to my supervisor first and try to work it out through my supervisor. And if I couldn't get it through my work it out, anything with my supervisor, then I would call my committee man. Mm-hmm. But usually with a good understanding with my supervisor, we kind of worked it out. And I think most of us in that area, you know, by me being an EPG leader, the area I worked in, we try to work it out with the supervisor without interfering, getting another person involved. But myself, I talked with my supervisor, but I would call my committee man and we'd kind of get things straightened out if I had a problem.
So, you said you attended the union meetings. Were you ever active on any committees? Did you ever hold any offices? What kind of things did you do in your union?
I didn't hold any offices but I was active. I worked with the Women's Committee. And I worked with the Recreation Committee. And what else? I worked with the Civil Rights.
So, can you tell me, how did that impact the people in the plant, the committees you did?
When you get involved with something with the union, you go back and you tell the other people in your area what you're doing, and they, well, how you get to do that? How you get off the line? You get involved with the union. You get involved with the union, then you know what's going on. And if something come up, a job or something come up, or open come up for the committee, then you can put up dibs in for that. I say why they asked her how you get that job, how you get off the line. It was I worked with Andy Graham on Employer EPG, and I worked with Rudy. I was on the community service, and I was co-chair of United Way. And they wanted to know, how do you get off the line? You know, you just go to the union meeting, you listen, and if there's an opening, you find out who's chaired this, and you say, I would like to get on your committee if you have an opening. And by doing that, but I don't want to go to the union meeting. Well, if you don't go to the union meeting, you won't know what's going on unless somebody come back and tell you. And I'm coming back to tell you. So, that was mostly, it.
So, with the United Way, how did the union work with that? What was that?
And in fact, I'm a person that loves to work in the community and to try to help people and to try to give back. I feel that I've been blessed, and I think that's why I keep saying I've been blessed, the reason why my children are where they are today, by giving back and trying to help somebody else and bring them along with me. And doing United Way and helping up other people, trying to convince them how great it is by just not being selfish. You got to give sometime. And you'll see that it might not come when you want it, but it happens. It happens for you. So that affect me, and I just tried to take that back to the plant, And United Way, I felt that was the time, place that I could do it. By sitting down, talking to people, and letting them know how good I've been blessed and what I've done in order to get here and what I've seen done and what I know can happen. And just let them know, because you talk with people. I found out when I did United Way and I was co-chair of United Way that you go and talk to people. A lot of people have problems and they didn't know how to solve the problem. And you, it'll make your day when you know if you can help one person. Yes. And so that's how I enjoyed doing that by going through the plant, just talking to people and finding out things. And if I could help them, then fine, I'll do that.
And so, and that was part of some of those programs that got employee involvement, because it went from supervisors doing the soliciting to allowing the community service representatives
exactly,
to do that and talk one-on-one with fellow
family,
employees.
Your friend. Supervisors doing that, they all they do is just lay the car down, have that sign when I get back. They don't talk to you and explain to you what this money is going to do for you or your family member or something. They just saying, this is what you need to do, sign it, and go on and I'll pick it up. Mm-hmm. And they don't have time to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have an employee, your sister or your brother doing it, they can have time to stop and explain things to you. If you have a question, if you have time to right then, I usually say, well, I don't have time right now, but I'll be back. Make sure you go back. Make sure you should go back, and I did that.
Roberta, it's Doug Rademacher. You sound like you have been a caring person and tried hard to help others. Was there ever a time when you felt that you were, that there was any racism or sexism as a woman in the workplace? Was there, were you ever treated poorly? Your attitude shows that you stayed positive. Did you have any trouble in the plant?
No, I didn't have any trouble in the plant with racism or sexism or anything like that. The people were, like I said, when I was in there, the people were very friendly, but yeah, I'm sure it was, but I just wasn't there, and I didn't pick up on it, and people complained. I can't tell you that I had any bad time or someone approaching me with an attitude about what's racism, sexism, or anything like that. I didn't, and I like I said, I also work with a lot of the young people, younger than I was.
Roberta, Mike Fleming, I'd like to ask you, what do you consider your most or appreciated bargain benefit by the union? For yourself, what do you think is the best thing that they've done as far as negotiating benefits for you?
Medical and health, the health benefits. That is a big plus, not only for me, and I think it was the medical benefits a plus for everybody. Because, like I said, back into the community and health, you find out that a lot of people have health problems. They have kids that's born with health problems. And if it wasn't for the health, our health benefits, they don't know. They probably could have lost, they would have lost their child or something like that, because they would not have the monies. Because today you see where children have health benefits, adults have health benefits, and they don't have, they still can't afford medication and stuff like that. There's still a problem out there. And so, again, your community service, United Way, step back in, because your health coverage covers so much. And then if it's going to be a lifetime sickness for your child or for you, it's going to run out. So you're going to have to pick up from someplace else.
Robert.
Roberta, when you just to be done real quick, when you talked about, you know, you did a lot of cooking and how you all got along very well in the departments that you worked in, can you remember when you were in your departments, as anyone came across a hardship and you all took up a collection, or is anything that you remember that you helped out someone within your department, or was that something that you all did in your?
We took up collection mostly of death, people losing their family member, or people had problems with, like I said, sickness with their child or something. We did collection mostly of death or sickness, and people would pour their heart out for somebody, something like that. And I think they still do. They still do. But all you have to say is somebody need this and they're sick and they know, oh yeah, I know. And they would
give the last penny out of their pocket in order to try to help and support. So I found that, again, in our plan as brothers and sisters, we was a giving family.
Roberta, you did a lot of community service while you were working. Were there any types of organizations that you were participated in that extended outside the plan?
Yes, I think that's where I participated in feeding the homeless. I participated in mentoring young mothers and their children. I was the one, I took people, older people, to their doctor's appointments. I cooked and made meals for families that just come home from the hospital and they were sick. We had a group of people that we would get together and make sure they had dinner. We would do it for a week, and then somebody else would do it for a week. So at some of my outside activities and work with the church funerals and things like that.
Did your union activities extend outside the plant? Is there any organizations that were union-based?
Yeah, we did union activities. The Women's Committee have done activities to helping the homeless, helping the Heart Foundation. We did fundraisers to help the Heart Foundation, cancer. We donate to the cancer and to the homeless. We have did at Christmas time, we take up mittens, caps, and donate it to Christa Rae, the children, at Christmas time. Thanksgiving, we donate food, and Christmas, we donate food. So it's an outside thing and that the union has taken part in and instilled it.
And you're also part of constituency groups also, aren't you?
Yes. Like I said, when it come to mentoring, I was Greater Lansing Chapter, Jack and Jill. We mentor teenagers. And also, we mentor, I was in an organization where the Cotillion, Debutantes, the young ladies, we mentored them and taught them how to edit, advance.
You also hold office in the Coalition of Labor Union Women, yes?
I am the treasurer of Coalition of Labor Union Women. I am a trustee on the Region 1C Women's Organization. I am I'm on the executive committee of NAACP. So I am involved with a lot of outside communities now, and with the helping other people, and all those committees.
Even though you've retired, you continue to do your union activity and your activism. Roberta, is there anything that you'd like to share with us that we haven't touched base on?
I think you guys have done a real good job on that. You know, touch base on a little bit of everything that we have that I've done, and I still continue to do that. And although I have retired, I still try to stay involved with my union and keep busy and try to attend the retirees potluck and stay involved and get involved with them and still try to help the people. I guess right now, I think I'm the youngest one that's retired that attend the retirees. And so they need a cup of water. I try to get up and get a cup of water and take their plate to the trash and so forth. So I keep busy, and I think that it helps me. And I think I receive my blessing if I could just help someone each, do something good for somebody. Maybe once a day, I receive my blessing.
You do well.
Thank you.
Doug Rademacher?
Doug Rademacher. Roberta, the Fisher Body Plan is closing, and we have you've retired, and we're moving on to a new chapter in Lansing, Michigan, with the Delta plant. To someone that's going to listen to this or read this someday that's never been in the auto industry, what would you say to the young people about work and work ethic?
It's things are changing, and they're changing every day. Our labor force is seems like it's non-exist sometimes, and it's very depressing when you see how we made it and how we come up. I stress upon the young people to continue to, if they're in the labor force and the new plant's coming along, try to make it a bigger and better place to work in, and try to, the work you're doing every single day, try to make it a number, your number one, top, so that I feel that when we were number one, Fisher Body still, even though it'll be Delta, we made it number one, and it took hard work, it took solidarity, and you can't do it by yourself. It takes a group of people, and you have to learn to work not only with employees within yourself, your union, you have to work with management also. And I think if you work as one, as a group, you can better yourself than to be pulled apart from each other. So it's still togetherness, any way you look at it.
Okay. That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for your time today, and we've enjoyed your interview very much, and all you've given to the local union and to the workplace.
And what you continue to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta.
Thanks.